Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Earl Carruthers, and I have been a serial cannapreneur in the growing, processing, and retail space for over 8 years. And we are here to learn together to get a well-balanced understanding of cannabis and cannabis products. Tune in every week for quality cannabis education for your canna inspiration. Hello, 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 and what up, dope? We are live. Give a little second for all the little internet thingies to kind of work itself together. Welcome to Cannabis Connect, folks. Welcome to Cannabis Connect, which is a show for budding entrepreneurs who are looking to get into the industry or who are in the industry, just to really network, resource, and fine-tune our skills. Budding was no pun intended, but low-key it was kind of intended. So if you're out there, this is a live show. This is an interactive show. If you do have questions or comments, you are allowed to answer those. And if it's a good question, if it's a question that's nice and kind, we will talk about it. If it's not, we will probably talk junk to each other. All good. So again, this is the Cannabis Connect. If you are out there, let us know. We're going to get to the show in a second. Got a couple of announcements. This is actually brought to you by the Craft Cannabis Club, a private club in local Detroit. It's a private club for like-minded people to get together for the same reason as this show. Network, share resources with other like-minded people as well. And we have also private events. We have burlesque shows, comedy shows, all that stuff kind of been on hold for a little bit. And I know a lot of you, what up, though? What up, though? When someone says, what up, though? A lot of people have been holding and waiting for us to come back and start doing events, but it is coming. It is coming. So I'm gonna put this up here. Now, when you do say comments and you are saying what's up, though, I appreciate it. Just a FYI, it comes up as Facebook user unless you sign in and give StreamYard permission. Other than that, if you could please let me know your name, that'd be cool. So I can say what up, though, back to your name. That's what's up. Cool. I appreciate the interactivity. This is an interactive show. I don't know if interactivity is a word. But it is now. All right, couple things. We're going to be talking about the ultimate guide on how to open a dispensary. We're going to talk a little bit more specific about Michigan, but we're also going to talk generalities too, just about opening a retail store, period. And of course, I'm not here to talk about this all by myself and probably don't want to just hear me yada about it. We have a very special guest. I'm going to tell you in a little bit. In the meantime, if you're out there, keep saying what's up to me. Let me know you're out there. For the person who just said what up, though, let me know your name. I appreciate that. But we have a very special guest. This guest is a legend in the cannabis industry. Him and his brother. I'm going to say it. Yeah, I don't think I can hold it in. Andrew D'Angelo. Yes, we got the Andrew D'Angelo to also teach us and kind of give us his insights on opening a retail store. And if you ever had dreams to, you know, a lot of people are like, I want to get into the market. I want to own a dispensary. I want to have this dream of working with weed. You think it's maybe all roses and just the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. We're going to talk about that stuff. We're going to talk about other steps. And also, if you have questions, as we go through the steps of opening a retail store, whether you're from Michigan or not, please answer those questions. And we're going to do our best to kind of give you insight about that question as well. So without any further ado, I'm going to do a quick background of Steve. Steve has been known as being a trailblazer. Yes. And someone who has been probably walked the road less traveled. Man, that is almost some romance right there. We both may have walked this road less traveled. It's fun, but it's sometimes not fun as well. So I'm gonna have to ask him about that too. Him and his brother, Steve, recently formed D'Angelo Brothers Dab Productions. Get it? Dab Productions, which intends to produce, support, and distribute cannabis content. And there's a lot of misinformation out there, so I cannot think of anyone better to help weed out some of that misinformation than Steve and his brother Andrew. And they have a mission to create new mythologies for cannabis and pop culture, smashing the stigma of the lazy stoner and replacing it with fresh and positive representation of the cannabis in society. Yes, I agree. We need to get rid of that stigma. If you think that stigma needs to get rid of as well, let me know in the comments. That lazy stoner thing just needs to go. Without any further delay, let me bring on the Andrew D'Angelo. What's up, brother?
Hey, nice to be with everybody today.
Man, you are looking like $1 million, man. The glasses, you look good.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Home office, you know, it's the home office.
Would you give us an idea of where you are recording from? I know you're at home, yeah. But we're in a country.
I'm in Oakland, California. So I'm part of the California cannabis industry, and we got a little bit of a head start on Michigan, but still a lot of similarities.
Yeah. You guys went from medical, went to rec, to rec, and things didn't go as smooth as possible, huh?
No, not at all. And still, our rec program here is still kind of a mess. So hopefully Michigan will do better.
Yeah. We're trying. We got the tax scenario here as well. But I believe you guys have like a 16% tax or something like that. Is it?
The tax is crazy in California, anywhere from, you know, 20 to 60%, depending on what town you live in.
Wow.
We also have problems with local people banning dispensaries. I know you have that problem in Michigan too. So still about 60% of California is banned, if you can believe that. And I think Michigan 75%, I think, is Michigan.
Yeah, we're up there. Yep.
So we have a lot of work to do.
Okay. Well, with you, brother, back there, I can't say. It seems like it's very sunny out there, man. You got some that was kind of cold here in Detroit, man. It's like snowing, it's like 8 degrees.
Yeah. We're lucky. We got a little sun. It was raining. The snow that you are experiencing today, we had as rain a few days ago. So now it's a nice sunny day. It's kind of cool and crisp, but sunny. I got my turtleneck on, but a little bit warmer than Michigan right now.
Yeah. You can't really complain. I mean, if you wore a turtleneck, man, you over here, you'd probably have like an Eskimo suit, bro.
Oh yes, I would. I would have an Eskimo suit. Exactly.
Awesome. All right. Well, I kind of like want to kind of get to this guide of kind of how to open a dispensary. Mm-hmm. And yes, we are from Detroit, Michigan. So we're going to talk about some things as it applies to Michigan, but just in generality, even California, just give it insights on the road to actually opening a store so people have a better understanding of what it actually takes.
Yep. It's hard. But yeah, let's go through it, man.
Okay, cool. So usually, I mean, it's very popular. People kind of, you know, want to open their dispensary. Now, your role, are you more consulting in the retail or did you actually own a...
Yeah, I owned and operated a vertically integrated company in California called Harborside. We were best known for our dispensaries. We started out as a dispensary. We eventually added cultivation and manufacturing. But for a good 10 years, the first 10 years of our company, all we were dispensaries. So that's how I learned the legal industry, was from the dispensary backwards. And so I know a lot about how to sort of start from the dispensary process. And I was a cannabis trader before I opened a dispensary. So it was a natural thing for me to do. Some people are cultivators, some people are manufacturers, some people are traders. I was a trader. So going into retail was a natural extension of that practice I had already been engaged in.
Awesome. Was it everything that you dreamed and hoped of?
Yeah, more than that, actually. The hard part about opening a retail dispensary is you're not in the underground economy anymore, and there's a whole bunch of things you need to learn how to do as part of the mainstream economy. Right. So there's a lot of new skills that you have to learn. I like learning new skills. I like learning new things, but some people find that hard. And the cannabis itself and the plant itself, we already had good knowledge on. Right. So we were able to use that knowledge to create really good selections for folks and a good connection with the customer, and we knew how to talk about cannabis as a product and get people excited about it. So, there's definitely some difficult aspects to the legal business and the retail, notwithstanding taxes, paying the tax man being number one, making sure you pay your payroll every 2 weeks is another one. And just, you know, grinding out a profitable business is not easy in any industry.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I want to say thank you again for, you talked about, I know you're an early trailblazer and traveling a path not frequently traveled. I mean, that whole 280E issue, you guys have been fighting that boy for a minute, huh?
Yeah, 280E is a tax provision the IRS has based on the drug war and things that happened before cannabis was legal in the 1980s. But this law makes it impossible for cannabis retailers to write off their business expenses. So your tax bill to the federal government is very, very high, and it eats away at a lot of your net income and profits. So we went to court trying to challenge 280E. We lost, but we're still in the appeal process, and I'm hopeful we'll win the case, but we might not.
Yeah, hopefully by that time everything is kind of just descheduled. Maybe it's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, I mean, really, the Congress needs to act. The courts are not changing the law. The Congress has to change the law. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, cool. So you mentioned you kind of had an understanding of kind of what it takes as far as the steps of getting to the retail store. And typically, we kind of think of step one as kind of confirming if you're even eligible to get a license. What's your feedback as that as kind of being somewhere where you start if you think about getting a retail license, kind of first see if you're eligible in your state or your city?
Well, sure. You can't get a license if you're not eligible. So that's the first step. And, you know, every state is a little bit different. It looks like Michigan's very concerned about prior criminal activity. I don't know if that includes cannabis offenses or not.
Yeah. So in Michigan, for the medical side, before we went rec, it was you couldn't have any kind of misdemeanor with, like, in the last 5 years, any felony. In the last 10 years, that's any kind of felony, not just cannabis related.
Okay.
And then when we went recreational, they decided to not include felonies or charges that were related to marijuana.
Okay, good.
But the caveat is sometimes, you know, it may have started with marijuana, but the end charge wasn't marijuana. It could have ended up being a gun charge or something like that. So
yeah,
that's the...
Yeah, money laundering. They stack all kinds of charges on the case.
Yeah.
So not the greatest eligibility, but not the worst I've seen. My brother has a felony conviction for cannabis. So we were ineligible for a whole bunch of states and a whole bunch of places. And that's slowly starting to change. And you're seeing it with at least the cannabis offenses in the adult use program are not going to hinder people from getting licenses. That's really important, because if you got busted for weed, it should prevent you from getting a license to sell weed. In fact, one might even argue it makes you more qualified for the license than those that did not get busted. So I'm glad to see that's in there, but, you know, it can be onerous, and we have to keep trying to get this more relaxed over time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially if we now understand how jacked up this whole lie was all about, and it was disproportionately affecting certain groups of people than others. It seemed like they should be the first people in line.
Exactly.
Being eligible. Any tips as far as, we get, like, different states may have different rules, but also different cities seem to have different rules as well, right?
Yeah, every city's going to have their own unique framework for cannabis, and whether that be how they zone cannabis and where you're allowed to have your dispensary,
right,
or whether it be the tax rate they charge you, And if the tax rate's too high, your problem is you won't be able to compete with the underground market. And you'll have a heck of a time getting patients or customers through your door if the tax is too high. So that's another really important one to look at when you're choosing what town or city you're going to be located in. And of course, it's also advantageous to be in a place that is surrounded by other places that have bands. That's always a strategic thing I tell my clients is you want to be right next to a town that has a band, because all the people that live in that town will come to your shop and buy cannabis.
Wow. That's a very good point. Very good point. Is there any, I guess, maybe creative ways to say, you know, you're looking into if you're eligible or not, but, you know, maybe you had a felony or maybe your financial background may not be as clean as possible. Anything as far as maybe owning the lease or maybe doing some type of brand contract to maybe kind of get back into the retail store kind of on the back end later versus on the front end? Is that a thing?
Yeah, there a lot of people will create a management company, and that management company will have a contract from the dispensary to run it.
Okay.
Some states require those management companies to also be eligible.
Yeah.
But some states don't. So that's one way of doing it, that you're not an employee of the dispensary and therefore ineligible. You're an employee of the management company, which is a company, not an individual, right. So that they're not required to meet the eligibility. So that's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it, I think this is just for licenses. I think that the law can prevent you from working with someone, being on the payroll of a dispensary. If you have a felony for, I don't know, fraud.
Yeah.
Are you not eligible to work at a dispensary or only get a license?
Yeah, for here, it's if you have a like a wire fraud felony, if it's a felony, you're not eligible to work in it.
Okay.
Well. Yeah.
All right, so you can't even work in the shop. Yeah. All right.
However, there is an I guess you could say appeal. You can appeal that, and within you gotta be able to prove or kind of explain away, you know, why that happened. So it's not all hope is lost. Okay. It's just that you got to do a little bit more work to actually get into the game. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing people can do is try to get the record expunged, especially if you've done all your time in probation.
Right.
Sometimes you can get the record expunged or, you know, apply for an exception, like you said, at appeal and demonstrate why you should get the license or be able to be employed by a licensee.
Okay, cool. Cool. All right. So step one, confirming if you are eligible, number one, because if you're not eligible, like you said, you can't get the license. But let's say you are eligible. And then now you want to start kind of thinking about your plan and some people to hire. Can you kind of give us an idea of, you know, who you are hiring to kind of help get your plan together?
Sure. Well, there's two kinds of plans you need. The first plan you need is the plan that's going to get you the license. The second plan you need is a business plan to make sure that the business itself works and can attract investors and capital into it.
Okay.
So those are the two things you have to do. Sometimes you can hire a lawyer or a law firm to do both of those things for you. And sometimes you have to hire separate. I'm a part of a firm that is very good at getting people licenses, and they can also help people write business plans and decks. And people can reach out to me and get referrals to that firm. That firm's called Global Go Consulting. And my website's andrewdeangelo.com. And I'll make referrals to you so that you can engage with these groups and see what it's going to cost to develop both of those plans. So getting a license generally costs anywhere from $50,000 to $200,000 to get a retail license, depending on the state, depending on the town, depending on the rules,
right,
and depending on how competitive the application process is.
Right.
A lawyer, like you said on this slide, is somewhere between $1,000 and $20,000 a month retainer. Some of those folks will get you the license and the application. Some of them will help you, but not do all the work for that,
okay.
But will advise you. But, you know, legal and compliance expertise you need early on, for sure, because you have to get the license and you have to develop a business plan. You can also get just individual people to help you with a business plan. That's not a firm, and that's not a lawyer, because they're expensive.
Right.
But an individual for a few thousand dollars that will work with you to put together a proforma and a deck so you can go raise money.
Okay. So that's the business side of it, but still you're going to maybe circle back to that attorney when it comes to getting the license plan.
Right. Yeah. You got to have lawyers generally know how to apply for these licenses and get them. So law firms typically do it. There are also consulting firms that have a legal department like Global Go. And then there's a whole bunch of smaller outfits that like Cannabis Business Advisors in Arizona. And there's Seven Cities actually there in Michigan. And those are smaller groups that can help too, that are a little cheaper.
Okay. Okay. So now, this is even before you got to pay for the actual license. This is one, you're confirming if you're eligible. And then even I'm assuming these attorneys as well, or these law firms will even do a more thorough background check of you just to confirm. Maybe you just went online, did some random things, but maybe you didn't know some stuff. Maybe you forgot some things, huh? But you got to retain them. So typically, I guess if I can give a, I know it's different from every firm and I won't put you on the spot, but typically, how much does someone set aside for this step right here? Like $50,000?
Well, to get the license, you know, like we said, it's somewhere between $50,000 and $250,000. You know, so those that are able to set aside a larger number, I advise them to do that, because if it's a very competitive jurisdiction, the people that are advising you on the license are going to make you do things to get higher points. And those things could cost money.
Okay.
That's why there's a range. That's why it's a pretty big range between 50 and 250.
Right.
Because depending on, you might have to have a cannabis expert as part of your application, and the state or the locals will give you more points for that. Well, then you got to hire somebody like me and pay me to be in the deck or to be in the application.
Gotcha.
And that costs a little bit of money. Same thing if you need a security expert for your security plan and you get points for that. You're going to have to go hire an expert security company or an expert security professional. And they're going to have to be in your application as the expert. And that's how you win points and get the maximum score for the application and win the license. So that's why it's a range.
Right.
You know, generally in a place like Michigan, I think it's been pretty competitive. So it's probably at least in the middle of that range.
Yeah, I would say so, because we don't have that like Florida or some of the states where there's this potential limited licensing. So therefore you have to have certain points to average get. It's an open market. It's really just based upon naturally each city that's opted in and then what zones they're allowing this to happen. So it's kind of like this natural cap versus a firm cap. But that's not also to say though, at a city, even though the state doesn't have a point system, it's a good point. The city itself that you are applying in could have a certain point or system for you to even get the city license, but you need that to even get to the state level. So no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Some other things maybe to consider in that business plan is kind of like SOPs, and then like how to get capital. You touched on it a little bit, but this is all part of step two, putting your plan together, your standard operating procedures, the marketing plan, the social equity plan, all these things kind of go into that plan, right?
Yeah, well, the business plan, generally business plans and decks are used to raise money for the business.
Gotcha.
Okay. Whereas a operation plan, which you have to submit to the licensing people, that's where you have to have your SOPs and your job descriptions and, you know, all the different, your org charts and all that usually has to go in the application. Investors want to know, how much money are you going to take from me? How are you going to use it? And when am I going to get it back with what kind of return? Mm. That's really the only things they care about. They don't really care how good your SOPs are as long as they make you money.
Okay.
And so they're going to be looking at the business fundamentals in the deck or the business plan, and they're going to ask you a lot of questions. Now, you know, one of those questions might be, who did you use to write your SOPs? And then having a good answer is helpful. But you don't necessarily need the SOPs in the business plan. You just need to let them know you have them. You do have to go get them eventually, and then train people, you know, with them on how to run the business. But you know, some of that has to be decided when you apply. A lot of that is flexible. So if you said in your application that you're going to have one general manager and one assistant general manager, and you end up only having a general manager and not the assistant because you don't need the assistant, that's okay because you've already gotten a license at that point.
Okay.
And the regulatory authorities will be okay with that. They understand that things change when you're building a business. But in terms of all these SOPs and employee manuals and things like that, generally, the consultant you hire that will apply for the license will also have a lot of these materials that you can get from them too.
Oh, that's what's up. That's what's up. So the initial state, if you're trying to secure capital, is not necessarily needed for that. But in order to get capital, they want to see that deck, and they want to see,
the plan. Yeah, for that. They want to see the business plan, the pro forma, which is basically the spreadsheet. That says what you're going to make, what you're going to spend, and what the profit's going to be. And then, you know, they're going to want to do due diligence and verify all the numbers and your assumptions and everything you put in there.
Which is where a firm comes in to making sure that you're not fluffing things up or just pie in the sky type dream. They're actually.
That's right. Or just a good consultant. Because the worst thing you can do is go raise money and then not do what you say you were going to do with it.
Okay.
Because investors get upset and they usually have rights to take control of the company away from you. Mm. So that's not a good outcome.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Thank you for that. You mentioned taxes earlier as far as, the plan, and, is this where, the consultant, the firm, or maybe a CPA comes into play as far as your plan? Is this needed initially when you're trying to get capital, or is this more going towards licensing?
Well, the CPA, you have to have a CPA and a good one, and you probably, whatever your legal team is, they're going to have a certain amount of tax expertise. Okay. to work with the CPA. But there's CPAs that specialize in cannabis. They know all about 280E. They know all about everything.
Right.
And they usually charge either hourly or flat rate fees per month. The it's not nearly as expensive as the lawyers. And there's a lot more competition in the CPA service arena than there is in winning applications, for instance. So, you have to have a plan. You have to articulate what your plan is for 280E and other things in the beginning.
Okay. So, and that's as far as securing capital, you want to think that through before you even.
That's right. You want to be able to show the investors that you're considering 280E in a thoughtful and strategic way. There's only so many ways you can slice 280E, but each firm has their own way of slicing it so that it is so that each company can sort of choose their own method of doing it.
Okay. So now this plan, just want to make sure I'm clear. This plan that we're talking about now to getting funding itself, you could hire a firm that kind of helps with that plan and then the license plan. But there's also consulting agencies, you said, that can help with this plan as well?
Yeah. So there's two plans. One is a business plan, and that's what you use to raise money.
Right.
There's lots of people. If you just type in cannabis business plans or cannabis decks, there's a million people that can help with that. I have some relationships with a few of them too. Then there's the plan you need to get the license. And that's usually a big cannabis firm like Vicente Cederberg or a consulting firm, like I mentioned, Global Go. There's also smaller regional outfits, one I know of in Michigan called Seven Cities. Seven Cities will get you the license, and they'll also, if you want, write the business plan and give you the SOPs and everything. So you can get everything from them. And then sometimes you do it a la carte and you get Global Go to get you licensed, and then you get somebody else who perhaps is a little cheaper to write the business plan for you.
Okay. 100%. All right. Now we get through these steps, D. I appreciate it, D. All right. So when a song, D'Angelo, when he came out with like My Lady, did people call you like, did you be like D'Angelo? Was that a thing?
Yeah, it's a kind of a thing.
I would have rolled that wave too, but all right, my bad. Back to the topic. All right, getting your location. All right, we're talking about a plan. You got a plan together for the investors. And then of course you're gonna be like, well, sound like a good plan. Where are you gonna do this at? Any tips on kind of finding that location?
Yeah, this is one of the hardest part of the whole thing, because every town that decides to have dispensaries in it in Michigan is going to zone dispensaries and make them all be in certain parts of town.
Right.
It's probably going to be industrial parts of town where nobody lives, parts of town that there's railroad tracks and warehouses and that kind of activity going on. Not a lot of retail, not a lot of storefronts, not a lot of residential.
Okay.
So the first thing you need to do is figure out, where does my town zone these businesses?
Okay.
Most of the towns, and maybe even the state, have that available online.
Right.
Then you have to look at every building available within those zones. How do you do that? You get a real estate agent. Got to get a good real estate agent. Hopefully one that works in cannabis. There's probably some there that do.
Right.
And then it's, do I buy the building or do I lease the building? Okay. Both have advantages and disadvantages. Obviously buying the building, you have to have enough money to buy the building. That's a lot. What you can sometimes do is go to a cannabis real estate company and say, look, if you buy this building for me, I'll sign a 10-year lease for you, triple net above market rate lease. You're going to buy this building and you're going to give me some amount of money to build it out. And I'm going to pay you back over 10 years with this lease. It's going to have some interest in it because you're putting up all the costs, and and I'm going to guarantee the lease somehow. You can guarantee it personally, which I don't recommend, or you can guarantee it with a license and say, well, if I go belly up, you get my license. And then the landlord or whoever put up the money for the building will have the license and the building, and they can lease it to somebody else. And get the return on their investment. So that's called the sale lease buyback strategy. And it's a little tricky. You definitely need a good lawyer to help. It's a complex transaction, but it's one way to get financing for your dispensary, that from a non-traditional source.
That's a great tip, Andrew. For real. Mm-hmm. That's a very great trip. Was there, I'm sorry, did you mention a certain type of company that typically does this, that you can go to?
The sale lease buybacks?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're usually what is called a REIT, or a real estate investment trust. They call it REIT, or REIT, for short. There's a few of them doing cannabis. The most famous one is IIPR. They're publicly traded. Industrial Innovative Properties, I think is the name of their group. And, you know, the way this works is you find yourself a building that's got a great location, that and you find a landlord who's willing to sell that building. And then you take that, maybe it's an LOI, or maybe it's some kind of just document that says they're willing to do this, and you shop it around to some of these real estate investment trusts and see, hey, you want to buy my building and do a lease buyback with me? So there's a few folks doing that now. It requires the cooperation of the landlord, whoever owns the building now, you, the operator, and whatever firm is going to put up the money to buy it, whatever real estate, whatever entity is going to buy it and then lease it back to you.
That's what's up. That's a very good tip. I mean, a lot of places here, even in like Detroit, they may have certain locations. They actually have something now called a legacy program, where if you live in Detroit for so long, you get first dibs, which was a reason why Detroit, once they allowed medical, they put a ban on recreational. It wasn't because they were anti-cannabis. They just wanted to make sure that Detroiters, and also those who have been disproportionately affected by the war on drugs, to have a shot at getting a license, because this is a more dominant urban Black city.
Yep.
So they wanted to make sure that those who have been affected to have a shot. So they have this thing called legacy, where if you've been in Detroit for 10 to 20 to 30 years, you get first dibs at the application process, and you also get dibs at certain land, which is why I'm bringing this up. But a lot of this land, I mean, you're still going to need a lot of money to actually build it up, per se. So
yeah, and might present an opportunity for this sort of financing play, because you have a limited amount of license, you have a group of stakeholders, legacy people that have first access to the license.
Right.
That means they have first access to the best locations. Mm. And that means that's valuable. And you can get somebody to do this. And that might be a really powerful way of financing some of these legacy dispensaries. I'm glad Detroit's doing that. That's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of any other city that I know of, even in the US, maybe Oakland. Yeah. I think Oakland did some stuff like that.
Yeah. But they did it based on police district and how many arrests happened in that district, and it was based, it ended up being corrupted, unfortunately. But you know, you got to keep trying to create these advantages for people of color and people that are harmed by the war on drugs, and we'll get it right eventually.
For sure. I mean, you're Andrew, come on. Let's go. All right. So you want to, step one, you want to confirm if you're eligible. Step two is getting your plan together. You're going to have to put some money up before you even, apply, per se, for the state. You kind of get your money up. help you get some financing together. Now, step four is kind of getting licensed. And I kind of give you background here in Michigan. It's a two-step process. Step one is getting pre-qualified, meaning you as a person, as an entity, as a corporation, getting qualified, whether that's your background checks, your financial checks, the business plan, but you don't have to have a location yet.
Okay.
And then once you get pre-qualified, because a lot of people who are pre-qualified walking around with a pre-qualification, almost like getting a mortgage, you're pre-approved, but now you got to go find that home.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Good.
So here, as far as getting a license, we could technically in Michigan do step one, step two, and step three. Hold off on step three. I'm sorry. We can hold off on getting that location while we're looking for it. But still actually be pre-qualified, which may help out your getting capital, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the process of getting a license, you talked about, you know, I just want to kind of circle back to the beginning, two parts of the business plan, one for getting the capital, one for actually getting the license. We just touch on it again here as far as the plan of getting a license, and you may be coming out with additional money here, right?
Yeah, it's going to be part of your licensing plan. So your licensing plan is going to have whoever's going to do the actual license application for you. Maybe it's Global Go, maybe it's a private attorney, somebody. And then you're going to have a budget attached, because you might have to raise money just to get the license. All right. And then, so there's going to be some kind of budget attached. And that's, like we said, it's going to probably be somewhere between $50,000 and $250,000, depending on the jurisdiction, how competitive it is, and so forth. And it looks like it's a little different there. It might not be as expensive as some other states, because your non-refundable application fees,
$6,000.
Yeah. Whereas Massachusetts is $50,000 in some places.
Wow.
So a lot better. So it could be significantly cheaper. But whoever applies for your license is going to have to get paid to do that, and that's going to cost somewhere in the 5 to 6 figures, and they'll have a timeline, and they'll have a budget, and they'll have a whole bunch of deliverables that they have to create for you, and then they'll actually put the application together and submit it, and then, you know, you either get the license or you don't.
Okay. And if you, once you do that, say $6,000 application fee, and you pay that company, five figures, 20,000 plus or 10,000 plus to get that in, here in Michigan, once you actually are approved, for a retail license, you're looking at 25,000, for that license. And that's an annual, fee as well. So,
yeah.
Okay.
So we're already at, we haven't even opened the shop, and it's starting to feel like we're a few hundred thousand dollars into this thing.
Yeah.
And access to capital is the hardest thing for all of us, for all of us. It's really hard for social equity applicants.
Right.
It's really hard. It's hard for me to go out and raise capital. Okay. It's hard for me. Who looks like me and is named D'Angelo.
Right.
Hard for me. Okay, so imagine how hard it is for others.
Right.
So there are things happening right now where investors are starting to create funds. Jay-Z created one with the parent company and Monogram. He's got a $10 million fund with the parent company. They are going to reinvest 2% of the net profits from that fund back into the fund. And they're going to give social equity licensees money to execute their business plan. That's what they're going to do. There's going to be a few of these funds forming in the next couple of years. Some of them are going to be run by investors that are like sharks that are trying to take your business away from you, or put you into a contract that gives them a lot of rights to take your business away from you if it doesn't go well,
right,
after they invest. But there's also some more righteous people who are just trying to make sure that social equity licensees succeed. They don't want to lose all their money, of course, but they also understand that they're going to make some bets that don't go well, and they'll make some that go really well, right, and they'll balance each other out, and the fund that's investing in social equity will come out ahead over the long haul. So we're starting to see some of this activity happen. And when groups like Jay-Z announce something like this, everybody has to pounce on it and send an email. And I happen to know they haven't even figured out how they're going to distribute the grants. They have to go through a whole process of creating the application for the grant and how they make sure it's fair and how they make sure people who don't need the money don't get it and so forth.
Right.
But they'll figure all that out, and then you'll get to apply for this money. And in some cases, it'll be private money, like the parent company and Jay-Z. And some cases, it'll be public money, like Massachusetts and California. We have all this money we've collected from cannabis taxes. It's supposed to go to social equity grants. Now, we haven't distributed any of the $14 million we've raised in California so far because they're drowning in red tape,
right?
But it's there. They collected it. They are legally bound to give it away to social equity people. They just haven't figured out how to do it in a fair way yet.
Okay.
And so I don't know if Michigan has any provisions for their tax money going into a grant fund for social equity. I'd be surprised if they didn't.
No, we don't. Actually, there was a work group.
We don't. Bummer.
Yeah, it was a work group that is a social equity work group. I think they called it something fancy. It may have been for more of a media thing, because only less than 3% of all license holders, whether it's growing, processing, transporting, or retail, are people of color. Less than 3%. So more than 99 or 97% of people, fortunately, look like you. No offense, but. So they tried to do that. And then one of the things they tried to propose was raising the taxes. And that raise, whether it's 5%, 3%, 2%, that will go to a social equity fund. Because the problem is, we don't have a source of capital. And if you don't have a source of capital, I mean, it really doesn't, you can have all the fanciest language in the world. If you don't have the money to get to the table, you're not going to get it to the table.
That's right. It's the biggest problem. It's the biggest problem, and it's very frustrating. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are really frustrated, if not downright angry about it, and you should be.
Yeah.
But all I can tell you is I talk to investors all the time, and there are some ones with good hearts that are trying to create these funds to provide more capital. It hasn't quite come online yet.
Okay.
But it's going to this year for sure. And you just got to keep your ears and eyes open for all the announcements. You know, make sure you subscribe to MJ Business Daily. Make sure you subscribe to the Marijuana Moment. Make sure you've got your finger on the pulse, because every day there's going to be a press release about this kind of funding becoming available. And you want to know how to access it.
100%. And it sounds like you want to put yourself in a position to be able to access it. Going through maybe step one, step two, getting that plan together. So when it's all said and done, you're not kind of starting behind the eight ball per se. You are ahead of the game. Is that something?
Because the people with the most solid plans are the ones that are going to get the money.
Okay.
Because even public money, private money, doesn't matter what kind of money it is, none of it wants to get lost. So they're going to put it in whoever has the most solid plan that's like, okay, yeah, I think that's going to work. Yeah, I think these people can do it. Okay, let's give them $1 million.
Okay.
And we're going to watch them like crazy and make sure they actually do it. So working on your plan is really smart. Get that thing distilled down into a beautiful essence, you know, show it to a whole bunch of people, get feedback. Don't be attached too much. When you get good feedback, incorporate it into your plan, make it better. It will pay dividends later on.
Nice, nice. I was thinking about taking my shirt off and putting it on the front page of my plan. Would that help out? Joking. Just
Yeah,
joking.
man, maybe. Whatever it takes.
Whatever. I gotta get this. All right, cool. No, thank you for that. And that gives a lot of people, I think, hope and not to get discouraged, even though you may have to put up some capital up front just to get your plan together. And just think of it more of an investment versus kind of an expense, it seems like. Because then that could
Yeah.
come into play later. Okay.
Yeah, and here's the thing. The promise of cannabis is, can we have a shot? Can we have a shot to make our dreams come true? Now, I've had lots of dreams in my life that didn't come true. I wanted to be a professional athlete when I was a teenager. I just wasn't a good enough athlete. So I could not become a professional athlete. But it was a dream that I invested so much into, and I really wanted that in my life, but then there came a certain point where I realized that wasn't going to happen for me. But I'm still really glad I went for that dream,
Right.
because now I'm still an athlete. I'm in great shape. It's part of my life, and it's given me a lot of positive things throughout my life, even though that dream didn't come true.
100%.
Here with cannabis, you know. You're going to try your best to make your dream come true.
Right.
And if you turn over all these rocks to find capital and you can't find any, and you're angry and frustrated and you want to, you know, you're just so angry and frustrated, then you might have to go work for somebody that has a license, you know, that can get the capital and learn from them.
Right.
Learn what You know, learn what it kind of took. Maybe there's some skills you didn't have and that you'll learn when you go work for somebody else. So the most important thing is I want to be in this industry. Nothing's going to stop me. I'm going to put all my will into that goal. And I'm going to be curious about if I can't own a dispensary, okay, well, maybe I can manage one. Well, if I can't own and manage one, maybe I can figure out, you know, something that the dispensary needs that I can provide that I can get paid for that. So there's lots of different ways to participate in the industry other than being an owner and operator. Not everybody's going to be able to be an owner and operator.
Right.
And so sometimes you have to take a step in between and you go work for an owner operator, you learn some things, and then you're like, man, I could do this as good or better than these people. I'm gonna go do it. And then you go do it, and you might have more luck raising the money
Right.
because you've got something on your resume, you've got some credentials, you've met some people, and so forth.
That's a very good point. That's very good insights and. I could end the show right now, but I can't because there's so much. I got so much
You
content.
can go, man.
That was great. That was great. I loved it. So just real quick, just really the last step I want to talk about is, you know, say we went through, you know, steps 1, 2, 3, 4, getting a license, and it's still, I mean, like you said earlier, you're still at a couple, you know, you're almost six figures, and you haven't even opened up your business yet. Let's just kind of touch on that a little bit, how that looks like when you have to build your business. To maybe, you know, designing the space, to even looking at the employee, you know, what, how many employees are you going to have? What kind of, how are you going to accept payments, cash or credit card? Can we kind of touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's not possible. Well, it's just starting to become possible with certain providers to take credit cards. But generally, dispensaries are cash only or debit card only businesses. So that means you have to have people on payroll that do nothing but count cash. And you have to have things like armored car come take the cash away so you don't get robbed. So those are inevitable costs. But you know, The biggest cost once you have the license is the weed. So you're going to need lots of products in your dispensary to open with. You're brand new on the scene. Mm-hmm. Vendors are going to make you pay cash on deposit. So you're going to need a few hundred grand, or at least $100,000, just on the inventory.
Okay.
And then of course there's the staff and the insurance and, you know, all the capital expenditures and operating expenditures. And yeah, I mean, you're going to need to design a dispensary and draw it out and have good interior design and have all your tech organized. So, and all those just go into different line items on your budget and in your business plan. Everybody knows that there's lots of costs involved in opening a dispensary.
Right.
They've given you the money already. They've seen that you have a plan for that. They think your plan is solid. And now's the fun part. You get to spend the money and build the thing. You know, it's important to make good decisions. When you do that, you have to make good decisions with other people's money.
Right.
Right. But it is the fun part. So you actually get to spend money and you actually get to, you know, those of us who've been in the weed trade.
Yeah.
We know that the hardest part is getting the weed. Once you have the weed in your safe or closet or vault or house or wherever you're dealing weed from, everything else is a lot easier because you got the weed.
Yeah.
It's no different in the legal market. It's a lot harder to find good weed in the legal market sometimes, unless the wholesale market's well developed. I think the wholesale market is getting pretty well developed in Michigan. I think it is. So you'll be able to order lots of different products from lots of different people and figure out which ones you think are best for your customers and put together a menu, right? Yeah. And then, you know, so all of that's in the plan and it's already been funded by investors. So really I view this part as the fun part. What inevitably happens is not as many customers come through your doors the first few months as you'd like.
Yeah.
You're new and I don't know, maybe a competitor opened up nearby or maybe there's a whole bunch of dispensaries opened up nearby or whatever it is. And then that's when you have to get to work and start solving problems. And okay, today, this week, this month, our problem is not enough customers. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to give Weed Maps a little bit more money to get up on the listing at Weed Maps. We're going to do a little bit better job with in-store promotion. And we're going to start a loyalty program. And by doing those things, we improve on how many customers are coming through the door every day. And then there'll be a different problem. Oh, we're paying too much for weed. How do we get the cost of the weed down? And then, you know, then there's a whole different problem solving matrix for that. So, but once you've gotten all these steps, now you're spending money. This is starting to feel good. It's starting to feel fun now. This is a lot more fun. You still have to have good judgment. You have to make good decisions, but this is, we're starting to have a little bit more fun now.
This is the business. It's business. It's not,
you're now building it.
Yeah. And this is, as an entrepreneur, man. Yeah. This is it's the fun part, but at the same time, new level, new devil, you know, every time you level up, there's a whole new challenge. It's like, God, what the,
well, you lose sleep. Right? You lose sleep, you stare at the ceiling at night and like, oh my God, I'm at this another level now of responsibility and stress. And that's why it's important. You got to take care of yourself. Excuse me.
Yeah. Hopefully you're taking care of that cough, man. I'm just sitting
I'm drinking this smoothie.
That's not good.
But yeah, man, we as leaders, you gotta take care of the self because you're the one taking care of everybody else.
Mind, body, soul, baby. Mind, body, soul.
Yeah,
I love it.
For making sure you're sampling your own products.
Cool. So I mean, here is really See, this has been great. Just kind of some key takeaways of kind of what we've been talking about. Maybe we talked about a lot as far as the roadmap. Any final thoughts, anything you think we didn't cover as far as this process that maybe someone who's looking to get that license need to maybe consider? You know, we talked about making sure you're eligible, talking about the plan, getting a location, even getting license itself, and then even building the business itself. Anything, some insights from actually running a shop that you think we maybe may have missed or I didn't ask you?
Well, I would say the most important thing to know is why are you doing this? And to understand what your passion and will to do this, what level your passion and will to do this is at. Don't do this because somebody else wants you to do it. Don't do this it's merely because you see a business opportunity. Do this because there's something in you that's driving you with tremendous will and passion to do this. If you have that will and passion, like I said a moment ago, even if you're not the owner operator on day one, maybe you work for somebody else, but you keep harboring that dream to be a owner operator, and every day you walk into work, you learn something new.
Right.
And every day you gain skill, and every day you gain knowledge, and there's going to come a day where you realize you've outgrown the job you're working at, and it's time for you to own and operate your own. And then you'll take another run at it and have more success. I've had to do a lot of different things in my career with cannabis. Some of them I loved more than others. But what I always loved was being in working with the plant itself. For me, when we trade in cannabis or grow cannabis and we have that connection to the plant, individual deals will come and go. You'll do good on some of them. You'll do lousy on others. But tomorrow's another day to work with this great plant. And if you have that attitude and feeling,
right,
you will be in this industry. You will find your spot. You will. It all comes down to will. So that's the most, and knowing why you're doing this. And if you're very clear on those things, and there will be insurmountable obstacles, it will feel like they are insurmountable, particularly with funding. And you'll be mad and frustrated at some moments. And that may challenge your will to keep going. But keep going, because what I've learned is persistence goes a long way in the cannabis industry, in all facets of the cannabis industry that I've worked in. I've been in the underground, I've been in the medical, and I've been in the adult. And all three of those just require a lot of will to want to do this and do it for the rest of your life. And so if you're in it for the right reasons, you'll have longevity. If you're not in it for the right reasons, you may find yourself experiencing burnout and frustration and anger, you know, quickly. It's a challenging industry because the government is in all of our pockets, and they're not very smart people. Even if some of them, many of them are well-intentioned, they're trying to do the right thing. They just don't have a clue.
Right.
And it's very constrained, and it's just very hard. So it's important to have that joy that you bring to it yourself, because no one's going to give that to you. You have to cultivate that within yourself. And, you know, that's the key to a happy life, is just doing something that's meaningful to you, that you get to do every single day. And you get a little bit better at it each day, and you know, by the end of your career, you've done a whole bunch to be proud of, and you'll have what is known as a legacy.
That's what's up, man. No, that's real talk. I find your why. You know, keep that why. That's what's up, fam. I appreciate that. And hopefully those who are maybe they have a license, or maybe they're thinking about going through the process, or maybe you're in the middle of the process, and maybe you were frustrated. Hopefully these words from Andrew just definitely inspired you, give you a little bit more gas to keep going, to eventually get that legacy. That's what's up, fam. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much. Tell us how we can stay in touch with you. I have your website here. I have your social security number up here.
That's my website. That's a great way to get a hold of me. You can also, if you're into social justice, check out lastprisonerproject.org.
Yes.
And then the other thing that I want social equity folks to know about, the Marijuana Industry Trade Association of Arizona, MITA, is doing a whole bunch of free online workshops with respect to social equity. And there's a lot of valuable speakers and information coming on that. You'll have to look on what exactly their URL is. Another free resource for people to learn and get educated. And they're going to be taking deep dives into licensing and business plans and all of that sort of thing. So I think that's also a worthy place to do your research and education on.
And that's called MITA? M-I-T-A.
MITA. M-I-T-A. Marijuana Industry Trade Association of Arizona. Wow.
Awesome.
And they have some great content and a lot of it's all free. Doesn't cost anything. So really important to keep educating yourself for free when you can.
No, 100%, and not just talk about it, but be about it, right?
And, yeah. If anybody needs help, the best way to engage me as an advisor is on my website there.
Awesome, man. Hopefully there's many blessings to you on this road. I'm going to pull up a quick thing here as far as, where did I go? Presenter view. For those out there listening, real quick, we do have the Homegrown Weed Summit coming up. I bring it up now too, Andrew, is that I actually wanted to get Last Prisoner Project involved to where I can make some donations for any of those who do sign up for the full access pass to donate. Because I actually have been incarcerated for cannabis, and I know it sucks. And if there's still people in there incarcerated for cannabis, I definitely want to help them get out as well. So.
Yeah, me too. Oh man, it does suck. I'm sorry that happened to you, but we've had a lot of success this month, last month or two, getting some long-term serving prisoners out. So, and you know, there's a lot of groups other than ours working on this. It takes a village, but I'm plug in anytime.
Awesome. I love it. With that said, fam, thank you, Andrew, man. This has been great. Hopefully we'll do another one soon. And I wish you all the blessings, fam.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Good luck out there.
All right,
John. Keep growing. Keep growing.
Love it. Love it. And with that said, I will see y'all next session. Peace out. All right, Andrew, thanks for listening to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. For more cannabis therapy blogs and resources, check our website, cannabistherapynetwork.org, cannabistherapynetwork.org.